That's something I've always noticed, that I have this kind of weird thing where I have to sneak up on myself. And maybe it's because I'm also demand avoidant. If I'm too obvious about what I want me to do, then I won't do it. Or I'll really drag my feet.
Hello and welcome to the Women and ADHD podcast. I'm your host, Katie Weber. I was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 45, and it completely turned my world upside down. I've been looking back at so much of my life, school, jobs, my relationships, all of it with this new lens, and it has been nothing short of overwhelming. I quickly discovered I was not the only woman to have this experience, and now I interview other women who, like me, discovered in adulthood they have ADHD and are finally feeling like they understand who they are and how to best lean into their strengths, both professionally and personally. Well, hello there. Here we are at episode 178. Can you believe it? In which I interview Annette Jacobson. If you happen to listen to my interview with Lotta Borg-Skoglund, which was episode 170, you may remember me talking about my former client and now friend Annette, who not only introduced me to Lotta's work, but has introduced me to so many amazing books about ADHD and other resources. Well, this is the famous Annette today. And if you haven't listened to Lotta's interview, make sure to go back and check it out because it is so good. I mean, I know that they're all good and I say that all the time, but you know, really seriously, if you haven't heard it, go check it out. Again, that's episode 170. But first, Annette lives in Copenhagen, Denmark. She never suspected that she had ADHD until she lost her flexible job as an administrative manager at the largest language school for adult immigrants in Denmark due to external circumstances. Suddenly, she went from having her own office to having to work in open plan offices, and she found that she really struggled with focus. After randomly reading a newspaper article about ADHD, she started to connect the dots in her own life, and she was recently officially diagnosed at the age of 51. Annette and I chat about her journey to an ADHD diagnosis, and we talk about some of the difficulties she has encountered seeking an autism diagnosis, and we share our opinions on some of the drawbacks of the autism assessments, especially for adult women. Annette is currently looking for the right career for her brain, and we discuss some of the challenges she has faced while trying to advocate for herself in the workplace and during the interview process. We also talk about the chronic self-doubt that comes along with ADHD, especially after a lifetime spent undiagnosed, and how important it is for us to feel trusted and accepted, especially in the workplace. And Annette is also a former group coaching client of mine, so we catch up on how she's been doing since she enrolled, which is a perfect segue for me to remind you that there are still some spots in my next round of small group coaching coming up in April. If you're interested, I'd love to have you join us. You can find out more at womenandadhd.com/group coaching, and that link is in the show notes. But first, here is my interview with Annette. Hi, Annette.
Hi, Katie.
Well, thank you for joining me today. I'm really, I feel like this has been a long time coming, and I'm just so excited that you agreed to be on the podcast. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, okay, well, let's get started. I want to hear all about what was the first light bulb moment for you when it came to ADHD. You were reading a newspaper article, correct?
Yep, that is right. In November of 2022, yeah, I had no idea that ADHD had anything to do with me. And I was just sitting on a hillside in Berlin looking at the city. And then I was scrolling a Danish newspaper and there was this list of behaviors. And I was like, what? That is me. That is me. And I screenshot it and sent it to my sister. And I wrote something like, this sure sounds a lot like me, but no, I don't have ADHD. And she wrote me back, no, I don't think you have ADHD either. And then I kind of forgot all about it, or it was kind of marinating in the back of my head. And 3 weeks later, I listened to a podcast about work life, I did not go looking for a podcast about ADHD. I just randomly listened to a podcast about work life because I had some struggles with my work life. And then I listened to this podcast and there's this sports journalist, a 40-year-old woman who had just gotten diagnosed, and she talked about her work life, and it was my work life, the way she described it. She had just crashed sooner and gotten to the realization because she had kids. So she was only 40 and I was 51 when I got the suspicion.
Do you remember what it was in the newspaper article in the little like breakout box? Do you remember what really struck you?
Yeah, it was the whole thing about the hyper focus that I didn't know what that was, that and the thing about doing things in the last minute. I mean, if I had known what ADHD was, then in adult women, I would have realized this way, way sooner, because it's not like I have this abnormal kind of ADHD. It's pretty standard, really.
Yeah. Well, I also think so much of it feels like, well, isn't that everybody's experience, right? Like that's what I kind of thought about. Even when I was doing the ADHD self-test, the one specifically for women, like it was just those crazy moments of like, wait a minute, this is not everybody's experience. Like it was just that moment of just like, oh, wow, this is not quote unquote normal. Okay, good to know.
I had that experience yesterday. I went out for coffee with a friend and I showed her an autism screening test. And she was just like, there's nothing wrong with you if you do this. And I was like, no, there's nothing wrong with you, but you might have autism. So I sent her home with two links. And now I'm afraid to write to her and ask her, how did it go with your autism test?
I know, right? I remember one of my best friends from university writing me after I had started the podcast and was very open about ADHD. And he wrote me and he was like, he's one of two friends that I've kept in touch with over 25 years. So in my mind, of course he has ADHD. And he's wonderful and funny and spontaneous and does all these things. So when he said, do you think I have ADHD? I was like, yeah, it's obvious. But then there was this pause like, oh, what does he think I mean when I say it's obvious? I was so worried I'd offended him.
Yes.
But thankfully I didn't. So let's go back to your conversation with your sister. Is she older or younger than you? I don't remember.
She's younger. Yeah.
She's younger. Okay. And when you started exploring this, what were the conversations like? Was she on board and... does it all kind of make sense in terms of your family life?
I mean, I haven't told my parents because I don't know, they wouldn't understand and I don't know what they would do with it. and they have enough on their plate, I'm thinking. So no, I haven't told them. My sister got on board pretty fast because then she had burned out really bad a while before I sat there on the hill in Berlin. She burned out somehow and suffered really badly from dizzy spells. She couldn't get up. Yeah, and she had been, there's this place in Denmark called the Stress Doctor. They offer private counseling for people who have burned out. And the psychologist from their place, he had pointed my sister in the direction of an autism diagnosis. And I think my ADHD suspicion had kind of primed her for the fact that there might be something there. I think it was within 2 months that I started suspecting that I had ADHD. And then her psychologist tells her that, oh, you might want to look in that direction. And she, I mean, you know about the wait lists everywhere. So she's just started being assessed.
For autism or for both?
For autism. I mean, I don't think she has ADHD but I mean, who knows? Because she could be really atypical, but all the things that rang bells with me, she doesn't have those things. She's better at at picking up the vacuum cleaner and all the things that make my case of ADHD so typical.
Interesting. Okay, so now when you were sitting on this hill in Berlin, had you already left your job at this point?
No. I have had two jobs in the past year. I had a job that I had for 2 years, and that was the one I had while I was sitting on that hill in Berlin. And then I found another job because I wasn't super happy in the one I had I couldn't get the accommodations that I needed in the one that I had for 2 years. So about a year ago, I stopped working with them, and then I had found a new job where they had promised me, I had really been open. I hadn't said I thought I had ADHD because I didn't have a diagnosis yet. So that felt kind of weird saying that, but I laid all the cards on the table and I told them I don't do open plan offices and I need this and that, and I want to be able to work from other countries. I need an enormous amount of flexibility. And they had just said, oh, but you can get that here with us. And then I started with them, and it turned out that they had kind of oversold it. And that was really how I met you. Because
yeah.
We had to talk about it at that point. And I was like, but I thought I told them, and I really doubted myself. I was like, didn't I listen when they said that? But they said that. And then you really confirmed for me that it's totally normal if you have ADHD to really doubt yourself, because you're so used to, you do miss things. You do miss all kinds of things. And I was just afraid that it was somehow me who had misheard, but it wasn't. And then I was only with that company for 2.5 months. And during that period of time, I think they thought I was a real pain in the tuchus, because I kept having talks with my boss about, I mean, I called him in for a meeting and then I told him, this is not what it was supposed to be like. And he was really sweet and he was super enthusiastic and they had a great product. And he kept saying, oh, well, you need to be patient. And then I gave him a deadline and nothing happened. And then I just quit. Because in the job I had before, I had the feeling that I was overexerting myself because of the lack of accommodations. I mean, I spent so much energy on figuring out where can I sit, where can I find a quiet spot. And sometimes I just had to sit in that office where I really could not think. So I was like, okay, I came from that. I had been there for 2 years. I had hoped that when they saw how cool I was and how good I was at my job, they would accommodate me, and they didn't. And then when I moved somewhere else, because I thought I could get what I needed, and it turned out I couldn't, then I was just like, I quit. And then I haven't worked since. And now I'm getting ready to start working again.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I didn't know that. So, gosh, everything you just said about accommodations, I think, is so relatable, but also very neurodivergent in the way that we think we will somehow get rewarded with accommodations if we push ourselves really hard and show how good we are from the get-go, as opposed to thinking of them in terms of like, this is what I need in order to be at my best. Like, we still feel like it's a me problem, not a them a them problem.
I tried at that job. I tried from the job interview. I told them what I needed and they said, no, you have to sit in that open plan office.
Yeah.
And then I agreed to try because I thought I can convince them. But the problem was that my boss, she wanted to accommodate me, but the people above her, they wouldn't let her. And she could do some of it, but if they found out, she would be in trouble. And I wouldn't put her in that position. And I've thought that in the past, that you work really hard and then you get what you need. Yeah.
Well, and I feel like I've worked with a lot of clients who feel like they're getting away with something when they ask for accommodations, and that it's going to show that they are somehow lazy. and that they're going to be looked poorly on. And I don't think that comes out of nowhere. I think it's true. But it's just so messed up when you think about the reason why we ask for accommodations is so we can concentrate and do our best and work hard and be a good worker. And yet so often it's interpreted as, oh, you want special treatment because you're lazy and we don't want, you know, outliers who aren't going to push themselves into the grave. Just a couple of like anti-capitalism soapbox at the end there. But
yeah, and that was the motivation of the bosses above my boss. They preferred to have people sitting from 9 to 5 in that open space office because then they could see if they were working. And the ridiculous thing was that what I was doing was mostly stuff I was doing it on my own. So why did I have to be there at 9 with everybody else?
Yeah, no, I know. I feel like it's the same thing with working remotely. There's some companies that embrace it and have really rode the wave and are doing really well as a result. And then companies that are just like, no, we need to keep track of you. We need to see where your mouse is going at all times. And it's just such an awful way to treat employees. But here we are.
I remember when COVID first started, of course, we had to work from home. And then my boss back then, she made a meeting at 9 in the morning. And then she also made a meeting around lunchtime-ish some days because she wanted to make sure that we weren't not working. Isn't it nice to be trusted? That's so nice.
I'm curious why you would say you made it to 51 without really anybody catching it, including yourself. What are some of the things you look back on where you think the signs were there all along, but they were just weren't ever caught?
Oh, yes. Of course it was there all along. I think it was because I made some non-conformist choices because I just somehow intuitively knew. Or maybe I was just lucky. I don't know. But I chose not to have kids. And I've never had a live-in partner. I just somehow knew that I couldn't do that. And I didn't really get how other people could do that. I just couldn't stand having people around me all the time. I mean, I really need my space. So I made those choices. And that's probably one explanation. And then another explanation is that during school, I mean, I could have a pretty flexible life. And then for the first many years of my career, I had really flexible jobs. And I remember sometimes over the years, you're like, okay, I'm not super happy. And then I looked for other jobs, but I could just see that I couldn't find anything as flexible what I had. And that I realize now, I didn't really appreciate it enough when I had it. But I realize now that even though we had our differences, I had a boss for 12 years who let me do whatever I wanted because he knew that it would end up okay. And that meant so much for me because I'm not very good at being told what to do. And he would sometimes tell me to do something and then I wouldn't do it. And then I would do something else instead. And then he had forgotten about the thing he asked me about. And so I just did something else and it was great. And then we were all happy.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because you bring up this theme of trust, right? And I think that most of the time with ADHD, we'll find a job that we really, really like, but what ends up being the part that makes us quit in rage, or at least me, is managers, right? We have an issue with managers not trusting us,
yes,
micromanaging, all of this stuff that can be really, really difficult. And so it's like you had this position where you had somebody who trusted you, but you also had the autonomy that is so necessary to do what we want. And I think those are some things like when people are looking for jobs who are neurodivergent, those are really important checkboxes to have, which is like, how much autonomy do I have and how much decision making? And I think why so many of us end up just going into business for ourselves out of lack of options. But the trust issue, which I think is really interesting because it's like one of the things I think we struggle with is trusting ourselves in a lot of decisions that we make, right? Like self-trust has been driven out of us from a very young age. So it's interesting to think about like how important being trusted is for us, and just in terms of the way we do things and the way we think and the way we go after. And, you know, sometimes I'm going to be doing things at 11 at night, and sometimes I'm going to be doing it in 3 in the morning. And like, being able to just kind of do your own thing is so important. And I think, you know, so difficult to really find that perfect combination.
Yeah. It's the classic, you didn't know what you had until you didn't have it anymore. Because I had two different jobs from I finished university, and on between finishing university and 2018, where I lost my flexible job. I had two different jobs. And when I lost the first one, I remember thinking, I'm not going to find something like this again. But then I found it. And therefore, I think that's why I haven't gone off and done something on my own. Because once I thought, I'm not going to find anything like this again. And then I did. So I've been like, oh, I just need to find the right place. But now I'm not so sure. Now I'm, I cannot keep on doing what I have been doing. So I'm trying to come up with something else.
Can you talk about the job that you have coming up or no?
Oh, I don't have a job coming up. I'm just, yeah.
That's how I heard that. I heard that as you had a job. Okay, sorry.
No, I'm just thinking about getting into gear again.
Oh, yeah.
I came out with ADHD on LinkedIn last week, and that was a big thing, and it's been well received. But I also started my post by saying that if you believe that ADHD is a bloody trend, then I have this book you need to read, and it's called It's Not a Bloody Trend, and there is a book that's called that. So people have been, they've been really nice, and I do have kind of a job interview, but I don't think it's for a full-time job next week. It's just I'm approaching getting a job again.
I want to talk about the advocacy piece too, but is there advice that you would give to somebody in your position, having gone what you've gone through over the last 2 years in terms of job search as a neurodivergent thinker?
I have kind of had the problem that I kind of got nauseated when I looked at the list of openings, job openings. But now I'm beginning to think that if I promise myself not to get myself into a situation where I say, oh, I'm going to try sitting in that open plan office, because I'm not going to try that. I'm just not going to do that. So what I've been doing, and I mean, I can't say that it has worked. I have made an email where I ask all my questions about how the office is and the work hours. And I send that and ask the hiring people at all the job openings that I see that could be interesting. But so far, I mean, it's kind of like if I were in a wheelchair and I wrote and said, do you have an elevator? And so far, they have all come back and said, no, we don't have an elevator, but you're welcome to apply for the job. Yeah. And they all have open plan offices. And I talked to super nice woman who called me back, because most of them I've gotten in writing because I want documentation. But she called me back and we had a really nice talk, and she talked about this job, and it sounded like a really cool job and I would have been great for it. But they were 200 people in an open plan office, and they were kind of working in teams. And then I asked, is it possible to go to a room if you need to focus? And yeah, kind of, but not very much. And then I asked back to her. I asked her if she doesn't have people complaining, aren't people complaining about this? And then she was very honest and she said, oh, yes, they are all the time. She will ask them to do something. And then they'll say, no, but I can't do that because I don't have enough focus time to do this. And then she even admitted that even though she herself was an extrovert, she was very often totally overstimulated when she went home. And I was like, okay, thank you. I don't need to hear anymore. I think she liked me, but she was also like, no, you should take care of yourself and not do it.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it sounds like, how do we get past this? Like, I think advocacy, I guess, is the real way to make change in this. But it just seems like there's just that shoulder shrugging of like, well, this is just the way things are. Sorry. Move along. And, you know, who was the first person who put their foot down and said, no, you need accessibility in the workplace? You know, it reminds me of when I came back to work after my first child. I mean, not only was I in the U.S., so it was only 3 months. And I was lucky to get 3 months off for my first baby. But then I was told that if I wanted to pump, well, and it was a newspaper office, so it was an open, you know, open cubicle or, you know, desks in the whole newsroom floor. So I was told if I wanted to pump at work, I had to ask the editor-in-chief to vacate his office anytime I wanted to pump in private, because there was no pumping room at the time. And I'm just, and at the time, you know, I didn't know what to do. I was sort of like, oh, okay. I didn't know what my options were. And I was like, that's terrible. So I guess I won't pump. It's so difficult as individuals to stand up for ourselves in those really, really important ways. So I'm really glad that you've turned to some advocacy in LinkedIn. So you outed yourself, you posted a couple articles. You said the response has been generally positive.
Yeah. And there are people who are writing to me privately and saying, thank you for doing this. I mean, it's so far, it's been good. I haven't regretted doing it. But I don't know. I mean, the way people react to it, when there are so many people who thank you for being brave or courageous, when then there's still a lot of stigma if it's so brave. And the friend I went out with last night, when I told her about it, she misheard me. And then she says, oh, no, I wouldn't do that. And I say, but I already did.
I know, right? I've had that told to me so many times over the years. Like, oh, you're so brave for admitting that thing you admitted in public in a very vulnerable way, which I used to always think was embarrassing, you know, because I was always like, is that brave or are you just telling me I'm stupid for doing that? Because it feels like there's not much of a difference, right? But then, and I used to think it was this terrible part of my personality that I couldn't keep my mouth shut. And I was always stepping first and thinking later. And, you know, I think that is very much part of ADHD, that impulsively like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to shout this from the rooftops. Now I kind of feel grateful for the fact that that sort of vulnerability, well, it can feel really embarrassing, or it can, like you said, it's very stigmatizing. There's a lot of ways in which we can get ostracized from certain spaces as a result. I think, like, I have to believe that in the long run, it's helping more people than it is hurting ourselves. I don't know. That's what I tell myself.
I gave it careful thought, I would say. And it was so hard to press post on that post. But I had a friend and my sister read through them. And I was like, do you think everyone will hate me if I post these? And they said no, and they said, oh, it's great, and just go ahead and post it. And then you can delay your posting on LinkedIn. So I put the clock on 8 o'clock in the morning, and then I slept through it. And it was posted the first time.
I like that.
Yeah, because I was like, I can't do it. I'm not going to press that button and then sit obsessively. And then fortunately, I had I had other things to do that day, so I didn't look at it until in the evening. And I had gotten a lot of great responses. And it's the one I posted Friday, it's still alive, which is something.
Awesome. Well, I'll make sure to put links to them in the show notes if you don't mind. So what is the diagnosis process like in Denmark? Because I know you did the ADHD process, which wasn't quick, but then you also had a not as positive psychologist evaluation for autism. So what were those two processes like?
It is with the same psychiatrist, both of them.
Oh, okay.
And it's simultaneous. You have to get a referral from your own doctor, And that was a problem because she didn't want to refer me, but I managed to persuade her to do it, but she didn't really believe that it was true.
Did she say why?
No, not really. I don't know. No, you never, I didn't get any explanation why. She was really reluctant to do it. And then I think she needed to go to lunch. And then eventually she was like, okay, here it is. And then after that, I changed my doctor. And then I had to, that was last year in February. And so I could get a time, an appointment with a psychiatrist in September of 24. But luckily, I heard about a new psychiatrist who had just opened up, and you could get an appointment much faster with her. So otherwise, I would still be waiting. And you are kind of in a limbo, because I wanted to know for sure. And I also wanted to start on the medication. You go to the psychiatrist, and you have 3 times 30 minutes to do both autism and ADHD. And the first one and the last one, I had to show up because she had to look at me and see how I presented. And on the first one, I think it was my foot that kept going up and down. That was probably how she diagnosed me with ADHD, because when I left after the first appointment, she was like, okay, I have a strong suspicion that you do have ADHD. You never stop tapping your foot during these 30 minutes. And then she sent me home with an autism screening. And I filled that in. And the next time I came, she gave me another one. And I didn't know why she gave me another one. And then at the end of the 3 consultations, 30 minutes each, she said, okay, you definitely have ADHD. And then she says, but I'm not going to diagnose you with autism today. And I thought, because I was totally confused, you know how you process a bit, sometimes you just process slowly. And I was like, what? But I was so sure that I had autism as well. But she said, I cannot diagnose you, even though on those 2 screenings you did, you scored higher than most of the people I do diagnose with autism. But when I look at you, your eye contact is good and you're too funny. And that is what she said. And I think I just wish she had said that the guidelines were that if I didn't present as an autistic, then she couldn't diagnose me at the same time as ADHD. What I then found out that it meant was I have to start on the ADHD medication, and once I'm well medicated, I can be re-evaluated for autism. Because as I have found out that often the autism will get stronger, or it will present stronger. But it's kind of funny because I have this feeling it doesn't matter what happens inside of my head. She looks at me and she's like, oh, you don't look autistic. And for those of us who have read Devon Price's book, Unmasking Autism, we know that there's no such thing as looking autistic.
Mm. Yeah.
And she also said that women who are above 50 and who are gifted are really good maskers. Ah, okay. So maybe it doesn't matter how I look like on the outside. And there are funny autistics out there. Chris Rock, Fern Brady,
Hannah Gadsby.
On and on the list goes.
I know, right? I'm convinced that every stand-up comedian is neurodivergent just by its very nature, but that's another podcast. It's so confusing. And obviously, if you listen to my podcast, you know that I'm endlessly talking about, you know, what is the difference and where does one start and where does one end? And is ADHD just a gateway diagnosis and all of that? But I also have not been, and it was the same thing when I read Devin Price's book, which was like, not a lot of people spend this much time wondering if they're autistic. Not a lot of non-autistics spend this much time wondering. And I'm like, all right, fine, I get it. But like, I still don't think I will ever seek a formal diagnosis for autism. Maybe I will at some point, but I just feel like the frustration, the confusion, the lack of education, all of it would just be so frustrating and crushing. And I don't know how I would feel if I was denied. I don't know if I would feel how I would feel if I was confirmed. Like, all of it is so frustrating and confusing, which then at the, you know, ergo, I must have it if I'm thinking these thoughts. Like, you know, I just go round and round and round, as I know you do too, because we've had many of conversations about this. What is it about you and your way of thinking, you know, that really you feel you relate to? If you were to describe, like, why do you think you're autistic to somebody, what would you say?
I mean, for one thing, the screenings tipped me off when I found out about how much I scored. And I've, of course, taken a lot of them on my own also. I have a long list, and I score way up in all of them. One thing is I'm super structured, and I don't think a lot of ADHDers who don't have autism, it doesn't really match up, because everyone else I talk to who are only ADHDers, they're not as structured, and I cannot abide by mess. I can abide by dust bunnies. I don't care about the dust bunnies, but messes. All my things have been trained to stand up straight. And I lived in a dorm when I was young, when I was studying, and there were some of the people I shared a kitchen with. They had this joke that they would go into my room and they would make all my books kind of stand crooked on the shelves, because they knew it would upset me. And also, I feel like it's my responsibility now to figure out, because I tried saying to the psychiatrist, I think I'm autistic because this, that, and the other. And then she says, yes, but there's a huge overlap. So now I have to figure out what is one thing, what is the other thing, and where's the overlap? And instead, I would really love to just have someone ask me the right questions. And I passed the screening test, so to speak. I passed it. I did really well. And I've heard you say the same about your ADHD test. I passed it because I know a lot of women who actually turn out to be autistic. They don't pass the test the first time because the questions are designed with young boys in mind. Do you collect trains and planes or information about birds? No, I don't. But I collect right now, my special interest is autism and ADHD. And you should see the Trello boards I have with snippets of information about autism and ADHD. Before that, I was into paleo, low carb, until suddenly I wasn't, because I was done. I knew it all, and then it wasn't fun anymore. So I have special interests that are really intense, and I think I cling on to them. I'm not the same hobby hopper as I have heard other ADHDers talk about being. They get started on a new hobby, and then when they have, okay, I have done that. Okay, I did do that. But I only did it once with acrylics paints. I bought the whole thing, and then I was like, nah, not good at this. And then I stopped doing it.
I've definitely done that with hobbies where I've gotten really into it. I've bought all the things I needed in order to become the best at it ever and then immediately lose interest. But one of the things that I totally related to when you were just talking about, like the side quests that we do, where it's like, I need, you know, if I discover a new author that I love, I have to drop everything and listen to every book they've ever read, Google all every article they've, like, I need to know their entire Wikipedia history. Like, I get very, like, obsessive about having entire catalogs and not just kind of being like, oh, that was a good book. Like, I have to, like, I become, like, a super fan of somebody's whole body of work in a way that you're right. It is very much like collecting cars or trains or, you know, the ways in which it would manifest as a child.
Do you think I have listened to all your podcast episodes? Do you think I have done that? Yes, I have. Yes.
I did the same thing with ADHD, and I'm still kind of in that hyper-focus phase. It just morphs from one crazy question into another, but it's still endlessly fascinating to me because I think there's more questions than there are answers, which is just such a fascinating puzzle.
It is.
Hey friend, if there's one thing I've learned about ADHD over the last few years is that we can thrive with the right combination of accountability, planning, coaching, and peer support. Knowing all this, I set out to create the ultimate all-in-one coaching and accountability community for adults with ADHD or learning disabilities. I knew I couldn't do it alone, so I joined forces with one of my favorite ADHD coaches, Alex Gilbert of Capable Consulting, and together we launched the ADHD Lounge. The Lounge was created as a safe place for neurodivergent adults away from other social media, where we offer live group calls, co-working, and body doubling every weekday for accountability, focus, and skill development. We have weekly and monthly goal planning sessions to keep yourself on track. We also have one-on-one office hours with myself and Alex. And of course, friendship and lots of peer support. We have three different membership levels to meet you where you're at. So if you're looking for an affordable way to stay connected, productive, and accountable, while also having regular access to ADHD coaching and expertise, then make sure to come join me in the ADHDLounge.com. Again, that's the ADHDLounge.com. And as a listener of the Women in ADHD podcast, you can get 30% off your first month with the code PODCAST30. So head to the ADHDLounge.com and use the code PODCAST30 to get 30% off your first month. During the early days of my diagnosis, as I was deep into hyperfocus ADHD research mode, I kept searching for some kind of all-in-one, everything you ever needed to know about ADHD in women handbook that I could reference and keep at my fingertips, but I never really found anything that suited me. That's why I've taken everything I've learned about ADHD in women and adults who are socialized as girls, and I've gathered it into a concise, easy-to-access, self-guided, and self-paced course so you can feel like you've got everything you need at your fingertips. It's called Hey, It's ADHD, and it has everything you need to start loving your brain and living a more fulfilling, gratifying life. I built this course to be helpful wherever you are on your ADHD journey. I am so excited to finally be able to offer this course, and I truly hope this will help you develop a deeper understanding of your ADHD brain and how to embrace it as you build yourself a toolkit for your own life. So head over to womenandadhd.com and click on the Hey, It's ADHD course tab for more information and to get started. Okay, so I want to talk about group coaching a little bit because, you know, so first of all, I will probably say this in the introduction, but, you know, Annette, for those of you who are listening, who Annette loves to send me book recommendations. I've had so many great book recommendations, speaking of, and also recommended Lota's book. And we talked about Annette on the episode with Lota Borgskoglund. So this is the Annette for everybody who has also been following along with my guests. But I met Annette we had a strategy session first, but then you had been in one of my more recent group coaching cohorts. So can you talk about that experience a little bit in terms of just anybody who might be on the fence with group coaching in general? But I think, you know, like you were just saying, that you and Paige were still in touch. So, I mean, obviously the peer support and the friendship element is a huge part of it too. So what were your expectations going in?
I just went in because I had listened to the podcast and I felt I had gotten so much out of listening to your podcast that I was like, whatever that lady is selling, I'm buying.
I got a bridge for you.
Yes. And an Eiffel Tower, maybe. Yeah. And I remember on the day when the email dropped, because I had bought some other things from you. Yeah, I bought the strategy session. But when the email dropped about that you were opening up for a new group coaching, I was like, yes, I signed up and I did it within 7 minutes. And I totally expected that 1 hour later you would send out an email saying, sorry, they're all gone now. And I don't think that was what happened, but I just felt I needed to do this to kind of, I mean, I have learned so much from listening to the podcast, and I could just somehow feel that we were kind of communicating. We were on the same wavelength. And then you get the community with the other coaches or whatever they're called. And that has meant a lot. And we were 6 people in my group, and 3 of us are still meeting every Wednesday in a Facebook group called Wednesdays Without Katie. And we meet every Wednesday, and one of the other women from my group, we prepped a bit before this podcast. She helped me with, you know, lights and stuff. It was great in those groups to meet other women and hear about their challenges. And we were just, even though we were from 3 different countries and 2 continents, we were just so similar. And to find that out, and we can be honest with each other and admit to all the embarrassing things that you're trying to hide from other people.
Yeah. It is still amazing to me, and one of my favorite things, being able to bring groups of neurodivergent women together, because I just feel like you said, it's really hard to describe how comforting it is to be around each other and to sort of have this shorthand in the way that we communicate, but also I think in the way that we see ourselves in the world. It's very complicated, because I think we can, you know, I talk a lot on the podcast about the sort of negativity bias that we tend to have about ourselves, that we see other women and we're like, they're so amazing, they're so together, and I'm such a hot mess. And we only see the things about ourselves that suck. But I think in some ways, like, we do understand that we are really smart and bright and we have very, very high expectations of ourselves, but we are also really, really hard on ourselves and have a lot of shame and a lot of internalized stigma and like a lot of those things that we're hiding from people. And I feel like there's just a way that we can be all of that and just like let it all hang out with other people that is so healing. In a way that, yeah, it's really, how do you put that in a paragraph when you're trying to sell group coaching? Let it all hang out. Like,
just yeah, let it all come and let it all hang out. And that was really what we did. Of course, it's online. And being able to get so close to total strangers from other countries so fast, I would say if anyone out there is on the fence, just do it.
All right. Well, you heard it from Annette. So are there any friends in real life? Because I remember you were talking about one of the things you love doing now is walking and talking with friends. That's kind of the part of your ADHD treatment plan, was to do a lot of walking, which is wonderful that you're able to do that in Denmark. It's not so easy in bumfuck nowhere US, but... But you know, have a lot of conversations and you have been doing. Do you notice that like every person you've ever liked in your life probably also has ADHD and autism?
Yeah. Yeah. And I wrote something about that in my, in the coming out post on LinkedIn. I wrote that if we are having a conversation and then I ask you, don't you think you have ADHD? Then you should know it means I like you. The people I have been closest to, I can see that all the way, I mean, back, the 4 people I've been closest to, either they have a diagnosis now, or their kids have, or they're considering getting one. And also, how are you supposed to notice that you are not normal when everyone you're close to they are the same as you are. I didn't know. And again, you haven't tried being inside other people's minds, and you haven't tried maybe feeling the calm that they sometimes feel, I've heard. But definitely that I'm drawn to other neurodivergents, and I feel safe around them. But I have decided, just like I have decided not to ask women if they are pregnant, I don't ask about this. I mean, if people ask me what I think, I will tell them. But I don't say it. I don't come out and ask.
Oh my God, same. I feel like also being in the mental health program right now in school, the vast majority of the fellow students in my classes are undiagnosed neurodivergents. Not surprisingly. I mean, it feels like the kind of field that would attract a lot of neurodivergent thinkers. And I'm always just sitting there being like, like, I never know. I'm open about myself and my job and my diagnosis, but I'm always like, you're on your own path. You're on your own journey right now. Feel free to check out my website.
It's a bit like, I see dead people. I just see ADHDers all over.
Yeah. I feel like there's way more than 10% of the population, which is, again, like, I'm so fascinated to see what the climate or landscape is going to look like over the next 10 years. There's so many books out nowadays and so many incredible, like, really intelligent clinicians like Lota who are at the forefront changing the way people are thinking about neurodivergence. So, yeah, I feel like we've got a front row seat, which is exciting. So do you think you'll go back to the psychiatrist, or what's next for you in terms of the autism diagnosis? Oh, I also wanted to ask about medication too. Sorry, I just don't forget about that. But yeah, what's going on with the psychiatrist?
I'm going back in March, but that's only for 15 minutes to talk about medication because I've been trying methylphenidate since last week, but I'm on a quite low dose. I can feel something, some nice quiet in my head that I've only ever felt, I think, twice in my life. And that was in moments of big crisis that, for example, once my dorm caught on fire and someone came in, we were having a party and someone came and yelled, there's a fire on your floor. And I just remember tunnel vision, and it was totally quiet in my head. Everything, all the 100 different thoughts, they were quiet, and the only thought was, I need to go up there. Stupid. But I wanted to go up there, and there was a firefighter who stopped me. Yeah, and I get that feeling. I get that funny feeling that it's so quiet. But it's doing nothing for my executive functions, and I don't know if it'll be better because I'm going to up the dose twice before I'm at the max. It's not doing anything for my executive functions. And there was something else I thought about. Yeah, it's doing nothing for my focus, really. But there are fewer thoughts.
Yeah, I remember. I feel like on Vyvanse too, like I can definitely get stuff done and become like very single-minded and single tasking. It's just not always the single task I want to do. So I'm like, I wish I could figure out how to harness that hyper-focus a little better. Cause sometimes I'm like, yes, I'm going to study for hours and I'm going to write that paper and it's great. And then other times I'm like, no, I completely avoided that. But I read 300 pages of a random book. And you're like, well, all right, I'll take it.
That's what I did when I was at the university back in the Stone Ages. When I had to study for an exam, I would read so many crime novels. And then when there was almost not enough time left, then I would do something, and then it would always turn out well anyway. So.
Right? Yeah, I know. I've actually kind of embraced that part of me for this second go round at academia where I'm like, you know what? It'll kick in when it kicks in, and I'm not going to feel bad about it because it always does. So fingers crossed. But anyway, I still wanted to ask you if you had a name for ADHD or if would you call it something else?
I don't really have a good one. No, I mean,
you said you liked attention, right? You felt like it should be in there.
I like attention because there is something with attention. It's true. It's just not, as so many people have said on this podcast, it's not that we have too little. It's not a deficit. We have too much and we cannot control it. So I'm thinking along the lines of maybe the D, the first D, A, attention, D, disturbance, maybe. And then you had a guest on not so long ago who said the H could be hyper arousal. I like that, if we want to keep the abbreviation. But then I don't know about the last D. Maybe it could just be disturbance again.
Redundancy.
Yeah. Maybe attention, hyper arousal, disturbance, and then it would be AHD. But if you want to keep the abbreviation, that kind of limits the options.
I know. I feel like it's important to keep it just because that's what you're Googling, right? And I feel like all the people who came up with clever names like Attitude Magazine and then it was changed to ADHD and they were kind of like, oh, crap. So as somebody who named their podcast incredibly straightforward and nothing cutesy, because I'm, because of SEO, I feel like we should keep ADHD. Yeah, I love hyper arousal. I definitely relate to that. I often think with renaming it, though, I'm like, what would have made me think I had it? Because I'm just like, I don't think I would have thought about attention. I don't think I thought of any of that. It was really like the first thing I remember really cluing in for me was it was a question really at the end of the day. It was about masking, which was the question in the Sari Solden test about like, do you hate when people call you unexpectedly or show up at your house unexpectedly? And I was like, oh my God, I hate that. And I was like, wait a minute, what does that have to do with ADHD? And then I had to really start looking more into it. But like those sort of weird quirks. So I'm still sort of feel like there's nothing in the name that really would have tipped me off at an earlier age, other than just like everything, too much everything all at once.
Yeah, because I think what I noticed most was that thing about feeling that I couldn't make myself do things. I want to decide when I do things, but I don't decide. I can get up and think, today at 10, I'm going to be at the zoo because they had a baby elephant yesterday, a new baby. And I wasn't there at 10. I was there at 2:30. Because then I got sucked in by LinkedIn. That's something I've always noticed, that I have this kind of weird thing where I have to sneak up on myself. And maybe it's because I'm also demand avoidant. If I'm too obvious about what I want me to do, then I won't do it. Or I'll really drag my feet.
Oh my God, right? I had somebody comment on the Connie 2 episode where we talk about PDA and kind of that overlap between PDA and RSD. And somebody in Instagram commented, like, I can't decide sometimes if I'm not doing something because of executive dysfunction or if I'm not doing it because of PDA. And I just was like, oh my God, girl, say, like, it was just so, it totally was like, there's something in that, right? About that, like, God, I'm my own worst enemy. Maybe that's what we should call it.
Yeah. And I'm Gretchen Rubin. She has the four tendency framework. And I think all the rebels have ADHD. And the motto of the rebel tendency is, you can't make me and neither can I.
Yeah. Oh, and neither can I, right? Yeah. I feel like somebody in the past has called it rebel brain syndrome or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It's funny how in Gretchen Rubin's framework, the rebel doesn't need accountability, but that works for us. It does. Sometimes it does. Not always, but sometimes it does.
Well, I think it goes back to that situation of like, are you in a safe place where you feel like people trust you to get the job done, right? And so with procrastination and some of the stuff that we've talked about, it's like, well, I trust myself now to get the job done. And so I'm not going to be so hard on myself because I'm going to do it the way I do it. And there's no way I should be doing it anymore. I'm just going to trust myself that I will get it done. And I do, because it's like now I'm my own best cheerleader. And so I think trust comes into it a lot.
Yeah, you do it in a different way than a neurotypical would do it, but you get it done. And why isn't that good enough? It should be.
Yeah. Hear, hear. Well, thank you, Annette. I'm so glad I could convince you to sit down with me and share your story. And I'm so grateful for our friendship and all of the recommendations. And yeah, it's just been lovely.
Yeah, I'll keep them coming. And I'm just going to interrupt you here because that's what ADHDers do. And then I'm just going to say that I have four people who have taught me almost everything I know about my neurodivergence, and that is you and Devon Price, Casey Davis, and Lotta Box Skoglund. And it's just you and your podcast. It has just meant so much for my process, and I can't thank you enough for that. And what I got from your podcast was, instead of lists, endless lists of symptoms, I have gotten the lived experiences of other women. Yeah, so I recommend it to everyone. I have recommended your podcast to 3 people just today. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Your check is in the mail. No, I'm kidding. Well, I just absolutely adore you, and I really appreciate that. And I'm honored to be in such esteemed company as the other wonderful people who I will link to. And you guys can go down your own obsessive cataloging rabbit hole into all they do. And but thank you, Annette. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Katie.
There you have it. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Women and ADHD podcast. If you'd like to find out more about me and my coaching programs, head over to womenandadhd.com. If you're a woman who was diagnosed with ADHD and you'd like to apply to be a guest on this podcast, visit womenandadhd.com/podcast guest, and you can find that link in the episode show notes. Also, you know we ADHDers crave feedback, and I would really appreciate hearing from you, the listener. Please take a moment to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Audible. And if that feels like too much, and I totally get it, please just take a few seconds right now to give me a 5-star rating. Or share this episode on your own social media to help reach more women who maybe have yet to discover and lean into this gift of neurodivergency. And they may be struggling and they don't even know why. I'll see you next week when I interview another amazing woman who discovered she's not lazy or crazy or broken, but she has ADHD. And she's now on the path to understanding her neurodivergent mind and finally using this gift to her advantage. Take care till then.